This is Radio Influence.
He heard it better.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the top.
Wow.
And here comes as a mention. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC Fight Night 106, Belfort versus Gastelum, took place on Saturday night in Fortaleza, Brazil, and Kelvin Gastelum scored a TKO victory in the first round, and Mauricio Shogun Hua won his third straight fight as he scored a TKO victory in the third round against John Volante. And we are going to break down this fight card on this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast on Radio Influence. Myself and Daniel Gavon are going to give our thoughts on everything that happened on Saturday night. Of course, we're going to talk about that amazing knockout that Edson Barboza had over Beneil Dariush, where Dariush was off to a great start in that fight. It was an excellent back and forth fight, but Edson Barboza times that knee knocks him out. We'll talk to him about that. Also got to talk about Ray Borg. Where does he kind of sit in the UFC flyweight division? Is he the guy potentially after Wilson Hayes could be next for Demetrius Johnson? Also, we'll talk about some of the stuff that happened on the preliminary card. Definitely want to get into what happened in that Joe Soto and Hani Yahya fight, especially after Joe Soto was leaking blood and the referee stopped the fight to have the doctor. We'll talk about that. So much to talk about on this edition of the post-fight podcast. As always, we are brought to you by Fight TV. Fight is a go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners. Live pay-per-views and TV tapings, full-length matches and interviews, movies and documentaries. Get a front-row seat to live wrestling, MMA and boxing action anytime, anyplace. Get Fight Free and see what's streaming now for you. You can download the Fight app by going to fight.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fight.tv/radioinfluence/. That link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Of course, along with talking about what happened at UFC Fight Night 106, we'll briefly touch on what happened on Friday night, LFA 6. Talk a little bit about Eric Anders, who remained undefeated. Also, Mackenzie Dern, talk about her and her victory. Plus, ACB 54 took place on Saturday, which was an event you could watch on Fight TV. Actually watched it straight from the treadmill at the gym on Saturday as a fight card that it was 23 fights, 17 fights ending via finish. So we'll talk about that here on this episode of the Post Fight Podcast. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going good, Jason. Okay, I just finished the main event of ACB 54. That was a nice replay of Mohamed Khalidov getting the 24-second win over Luke Barnett. We'll get into that later. But it was a good weekend, Jason. You know, the NCAA tournament, the brackets are out. I'm looking forward to that. While we're recording this, I may or may not have my eye on the Rockets game. But mostly, Jason, I am just jazzed up to talk about Kelvin Gastelum as he returns to 170. Let's make it happen, baby.
He's already talking about it, and I'm just like, God, can we just, you know, and he talked about it in his post-fight press conference, and I'm sitting there going, my first thought is every time I hear Kelvin Gastelum bring it up, and I go, man, that's such a bad idea, but then I'm sitting there going, where is the question to Kelvin Gastelum of how do you sell the UFC on this?
Yeah, how do you sell the UFC on this is an interesting proposition because despite the fact that you do have some interesting names at 185, it is still littered with a lot of old dudes, a lot of guys with title experience. So for the UFC, I think you could make the case that there's more value in them personally having a guy fight at 185 than 170, rising up the ranks. But more than that, it is in their best interest to have a guy that will make weight because that is a pretty important thing. And with Kelvin Gastelum, the details is not that, oh, he is too small for this division in terms of his frame and like how this will incorporate into his success. The issue is that he simply can't make 170. And despite the fact that maybe you look at his size and you contrast it with fighters in each division and you say, oh, that's kind of a welterweight frame. At the end of the story, he has not only missed weight once, he's done it multiple times. And the punishment for not making weight consistently should be you aren't allowed to fight in that weight class.
And he's looked amazing at 185. I mean, you think about that, how he looked against Tim Kennedy late last year, and now you look at how well he looked against Vitor Belfort. You know, Vitor, he looked good for about 2 minutes. And I was sitting there going, man, maybe we're going to see just as Vitor Belfort in Brazil, here comes that knockout. And I think that when you think about Vitor Belfort and you think about him in his last five fights, where, of course, he's dropped four of those five fights, he's looked good for about 2 to 3 minutes. And then once he hits about that three-minute mark, it just all goes downhill. I mean, kudos to Kevin Gastelum. He looked great here. Some, you know, you look at the two knockdowns he had of Vitor Belfort, tremendous combinations that he sat there and landed. And I think it's the one thing when you look at Vitor Belfort is, I hope there is someone around Vitor that tells him it's time. Because I don't like to be that guy that says when a guy should or should not retire. But when you look at the way Vitor has lost in his last three fights that he's lost in a row, Jacare Souza, Gegard Mousasi, and now Kevin Gastelum, this guy's just not an elite fighter anymore.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's simple, right? Here's the rule. If we tell ourselves, you looked good for 2 minutes, though, it's probably a bit time, right? It's probably over. If we're like super excited that you looked competent for a portion of a fight. Now, with that being said, his losses are to great fighters. He's lost four or five. You know who else lost four or five recently? Shogun Hua. And he's rebounded with a nice three. Like, the perfect cure to a losing streak is to fight worse fighters. So for Vitor, I mean, he probably should retire. The ceiling appears to be closing down. Don't get me wrong. Michael Bisping is middleweight champion, so who knows? But for Vitor, it's like retire or do something safer, like fight in Bellator. That'd probably be safer than retiring. But when you look at Vitor, you look at the fact that this guy is currently, you look at the UFC rankings, he's ninth. And the fact that he's the ninth ranked fighter, and then like maybe Anderson is seventh, and you go on down the line, Bisping the champ, etc. I don't understand why Kelvin Gastelum would not be gung-ho about really taking advantage of 185. And I do think he has 1 foot in the pool of 185. I thought the call-out of Anderson Silva was brilliant, Jason. But I think for Kelvin Gastelum, I think even from his own selfish perspective of which place gives him the best opportunity to win and create a name for himself, it's in the very weight class where he just won last night.
Oh, I love the call out of Anderson Silva. I thought that was a smart move on his part. You know, when it comes to Vitor Belfort, it's hard for me to believe that he truly only wants to fight one more time.
Oh, yeah. It's
And can we stop with this whole Legends Tour thing of, hey, let's have a promotion or a division that's just Legends. Can we stop this?
Yeah, like, come on, you got to be more vague about it and subtle, like Bellator. And I'm sorry, Bellator, I have too many digs, but it's one of those things where if you do a Hoist Gracie fight, I'm just going to relentlessly beat it into you, you know?
Look, from a financial aspect, Bellator had the opportunity to sign Vitor Belfort, there's only one reason if I'm Bellator I do this.
What?
Because you want to go to Brazil.
Dude.
You do Vitor Belfort in a main event fighting whoever's a middleweight champion. And then you have basically Patricio Pitbull, Patricky Pitbull, you know, on the main card.
Yeah, no, Jason, but the thing is, you aren't Bellator. Like, I think if you aren't Bellator, right, it's not your brain in that chair. If Vitor offered a contract that said, I will fight anywhere except Brazil, they would still sign him. That's what I think, personally. I just think
But I think from a financial aspect, if you were... Look, if you were Bellator, and look, I think it's a 50-50 chance whether we ever see Vitor Belfort fight in the Bellator cage, and maybe it's even higher than 50-50. Yeah. If you're Bellator from a financial aspect, if you wanted to bring in Vitor, you're bringing Vitor in to fight in Brazil.
Oh, totally. That's the reason. But I also think what Bellator finds attractive, and while I do criticize it, I do see the upside of like simply signing fighters with some level of cachet and name value so you get eyeballs to your product. And in the brutal way of looking at that, where you aren't really compelled to feel bad from an emotional standpoint to put on these 39-year-old fighters in harm's way, I feel like there is a real benefit to signing these guys. Those contracts are probably going to be significant, but the benefit of having your card, quote-unquote, matter is certainly there. And then from a local standpoint, you're right. Vitor is a draw in Brazil. I mean, Brazil's crowd, they showed up tonight, or last night, excuse me. They showed up. I mean, even the energy in some of those preliminary fights I thought was pretty damn exceptional. And this isn't Brazil's first rodeo, man. I mean, this is a country that has been targeted time and again by the UFC. And I'm still constantly impressed by kind of the atmosphere they had.
What's up with the UFC going these places that have no AC, though?
I don't know. The arenas are interesting.
Like, if the UFC, if you're a UFC fighter and they offer you a fight in Brazil, is that got to be part of the questions when you start thinking about where you're going to take this fight? Hey, does the venue have AC?
Yeah, I love me some AC. I don't know. I don't want to be that guy that, like, criticized the whole farce that was, like, the Brazilian government putting all this money into building all these facilities for the Olympics and World Cup.
Oh, did you notice Anik mention that?
No, I didn't, actually.
Apparently, last night's UFC event was the first event in that building since the Olympics.
Wait, that building was made for the Olympics?
Yes.
And it didn't have AC?
Yeah.
Wow. No, those pictures are crazy. And they were so expected, by the way. There is a track record of, like, these cities and countries building things for Olympics or World Cup, and literally you can do a slideshow of them being abandoned, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, that's troubling, but I do like it. I mean, what was the actual name of this city? Let me look that up. Do you know the name of the
Fortaleza,
city?
Fortaleza, Brazil.
Fortaleza, yeah. I mean, I like that they go to different places in Brazil. I know a few Brazilians. I'll ask them about Fortaleza, and I'll ask them about Paulo Henrique Costa's political views, stuff like that.
Yeah, he had a tremendous UFC debut. Did not last long, but yeah, his post-fight interview where it basically sounds like, I guess there's a Brazilian version of Donald Trump. And yeah, he praised him. So yeah, I saw some tweets about that. But in terms of, I do want to get back to Kelvin Gastelum, but we'll talk a little bit about Vitor Belfort. In terms of, he says he only has one fight left. He wants it to be in Rio, and he wants it to be against a non-Brazilian. Looking at the middleweight roster and saying that it's going to be a middleweight, there were a couple guys that, two guys that came to my mind that I thought would make sense for Vitor. Uriah Hall and Sam Alvey.
Yeah, Uriah Hall's the one that makes the most sense, right? Sam Alvey's up there too, but with Uriah Hall, what you like about him is he was just recently in a main event, so he has that name value. But most importantly, this is what you like about Uriah Hall. This dude, in a fight against Vitor Belfort, creates a high probability for extreme violence. And that is very, very, you probably don't want to see Vitor get knocked out. He's up there in age. You don't want to see Uriah get knocked out. It's violent. But if you're, like I said, cold-blooded, you're not emotional, you don't care, you're a mad scientist, the fight to make, given that requirement of in Brazil, Vitor's last fight against a non-Brazilian, Uriah Hall, Vitor's the answer. Despite the fact that Hall has three consecutive losses, he still makes sense from a ranking standpoint. And more importantly, Jason, Hall and Vitor, I think, promises to be exciting. With that being said, about your Sam Alvey matchup, what I like more about that is I think Sam Alvey may do a much better job of promoting it, because Sam Alvey has really done a nice job of promoting these random, like, preliminary type fights that he's been a part of. So mm-hmm. I think if you put him in a position to main event a card, he may just live up to the occasion in terms of the press demands.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Did you watch this card live or via DVR?
Oh, DVR went all the way. I had to work. Why?
So I'm watching this fight card live. There was a couple fights I had to go out because I was going to pick up some food, but mm-hmm. pretty much watch all these fights live. When it comes up early on that main card, man, I was struggling staying awake. I don't know if it was just because I'm typically a pretty early riser, and when you're talking about watching a card, you know, till, you know, midnight, 1 o'clock East Coast time, you know, the ACB show, love their pacing. They just go fight to fight to fight to fight. It's absolutely amazing. I'm like, man, wouldn't it be wonderful if the UFC did this? But definitely the Barboza knockout definitely woke me up there, but yeah, it's I mean, there was just times during that car I was like, man, it would be so much nicer if these fights would just happen quicker than they do.
Yeah, Jason, it's called You Don't Watch Them Live. That's my strategy. Although I have to work during these times, so that's my reason why I don't watch.
Yeah, you have a legitimate reason.
But I feel like I'm just going to assume you were the most tired. The fight I found the most hard to watch personally was Jeremy Kennedy, Honey Jason was pretty boring, but honestly the Moraes Davi Ramos fight,
it
didn't feel like much was happening. I mean, the Betch Correa Mario Renault fight kind of sucked the first round. That last round was great.
Davi Ramos, a smaller Rasmul Pajares. They look just like each other. Long lost brothers or cousins or something?
You're right, man. I mean, even the facial hair, which is not like something that he is in complete control of. He's also very buff. Yeah, you could be right. I hope he doesn't take up any of the quote unquote, the attributes, the post fight attributes that his long lost cousin has. But
it was one of those fights where it's just like, Ramos tried to get the fight to ground a couple times in the second and third round, but they were not great attempts to try to get that fight to the ground. And it just, you saw two guys and Sergio Moraes, you talk about, these guys that put on these long winning streaks or unbeaten streaks in his part where it's just so quiet, and because of kind of how the fights go, the UFC doesn't really push them. And I think this car was a kind of an example of that. You look at the run Francisco Trinaldo has been on, and really hasn't gotten that push from the UFC. You look at the run that Sergio Moraes has put on. UFC really hasn't pushed them, and I think these fighters would kind of start to realize that if you want to get the push from the UFC, if you know how to sell a fight, that obviously is a big part of it, but it's ultimately the fighting style and getting people excited to watch your fights. And by the way, in terms of things I did not see coming in this fight card, Miguel Prezarius with his stoppage victory in the first round, did not see that one coming.
Yeah, and to force Josh Pirkman to retire,
lasted what? I don't know, 20 seconds?
Yeah, I think you should take that retirement segment, Jason, put it in a can, and just show it to every person to describe what a mixed martial arts retirement is, because that's what it is, Jason. Prezeris, that was a good win. Paulo Henrique Costa, moving back to him, his finish was just like, he went to business, man. He came in against Gareth McClellan and took him out, but that Kevin Lee victory, tracing back to that one against Francisco Trinaldo, I thought that was the guy in the first six fights that was undoubtedly the guy to circle and star, because Trinaldo, like you mentioned, he had won so much despite kind of the lack of a rep. He displayed great skill, and in the first round he was fantastic, but Kevin Lee rebounded nicely on the feet to score it on the ground and grab the easy choke there. I thought Kevin Lee was one of the stars of the night.
He got off to a bad start in that fight, though.
It's true, but he goes and he wins, and now we're talking about some big time fights for him, which I don't know what's next for Kevin Lee.
It's not Khabib Nurmagomedov the way look, I blame him for making that call out. No, he said, hey, I'll fight Khabib in July, and I'm sitting there going, that's not possible because of Khabib and his religion. He's not going to fight between the end of May and pretty much early July. Probably the next time you see Khabib at right before Memorial Day weekend, if he's going to fight before then. If not, we're not going to see Khabib till at least August. Kevin Lee, he's got to be put in the top 15, you would think, especially with the win over Francisco Trinaldo. Trinaldo was ranked number 11. I think that, there's, when you look at that bottom 15, Will Brooks, he's got to fight, already booked. Ally Quintus got a fight already booked. Of course, him and Lee have already fought once. You've got Evan Dunham. Gilbert Melendez is talking about going to 145 pounds. So, maybe Evan Dunham is a type of fight that, but I believe I'm pretty sure they're both trained at Extreme Couture. So that probably puts that out of the mix. So I'm really not sure maybe it's a Beneil Dariush guy coming off a lawsuit. Of course, lost on this fight card as well.
Yeah, I think it's certainly in that bridge to the top seven, top eight. That's where he's at. He's got to face some troll, and I mean troll in like a boss level, not in a troll standpoint. He's got to face some guy to get past the bridge, get past the gate, to get a part of that top seven. So I think I don't know what the name is. It could be a guy like Beno Dariush, who was kind of flirting with that top seven, top six, unfortunately getting knocked out in brutal fashion. So maybe something like that. Maybe there's a couple lightweight fights on the horizon that we need to see play out, and then we're like, oh, that makes the most sense. But for Kevin Lee, I do think he's one victory away from really being a part of a discussion where we're looking at the top six at the lightweight division and saying, that's who Kevin Lee needs to fight. He's not there quite yet. The win over Trinaldo was great. The first round, again, presents some level of caution I think you must make when predicting the next Kevin Lee fight against a high-level fighter. But he was certainly phenomenal. And it was a night, I thought, Jason, of just the Edson Barboza win, too. I mean, a great night for the lightweight division. Just a great night for the lightweight division.
And you look at, you know, the run that Edson Barboza has been on, and, you know, it was a fight where, you know, he lost the first round on the scorecards against Beno Dariush and just times that knee perfectly. This guy has now put together three wins in a row, four of his last five, his three-fight winning streak, decision win against Anthony Pettis, decision win against Gilbert Melendez, and, of course, now this knockout against Beno Dariush. And, you know, right after that fight was over, I go right to the UFC rankings. I'm like, okay, what's next for Edson Barboza? And you go, okay, he walked in this fight as a number five challenger. Number four is Rafael Dos Anjos. Dos Anjos has made it clear that, you know, he's going to move up to 170 pounds. So then you got Eddie Alvarez. We know Eddie's got that fight booked against Dustin Poirier at UFC 211, which, by the way, that is an unbelievable card. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You talk about a wide range of difference. UFC 210 and UFC 211. Whoa. I'm afraid to say it.
Uh-huh.
If someone pulls out of that main event, UFC 210, that's a pay-per-view that's in trouble.
Let me see.
If Rumble or DC does not make it to April 8th,
yeah,
that card's in trouble.
Let me look at this. And good thing, when you think of the light heavyweight championship, the last thing you think of is fighters pulling out. Yeah, that is crazy. I mean, you only have two fights that are interesting outside of the main event. Musasi Weidman and Will Brooks and Oliveira, Charles Oliveira. And oh my God, that is rough. And you look at UFC 211, Jason, and it is just, I mean, I hate getting excited about a card that's going to happen in May right now, because we know, like, I feel like in the very back of our voice, we both know that, like, oh my God, we're cursing the hell out of this card.
Oh, but of course we are.
When you look at the top five fights and then whatever's going to be left for scraps, I mean, for those that don't know the card, you got Cejudo, Sergio Pettis, Eddie Alvarez, Dustin Poirier, Maya Masvidal, Edgar Yair, Joanna, and Andrade, and Miocic JDS. I mean, that's let's be honest, Jason, we've been going through some interestingly weak UFC cards lately.
It seems like with pay-per-views, it's a really strong card, then a card.
Yeah.
And then really strong card, then a I mean, UFC 210, I mean, you feel bad for Cormier and Rumble. I mean, look, it's a fight that I'm really interested to see. Can Rumble make the adjustments needed? Because I kind of, in a way, I do favor Rumble in that fight. But you look at the rest of that card, and there's just not depth there. You know, and maybe I think part of it is probably we're a little down on Chris Weidman against Gegard Mousasi. I mean, it's a very big fight at 185 pounds, but the way things have gone with Chris Weidman recently, I mean, we're down on Chris Weidman. So, but then when you compare it to UFC 211, it's just it's night and day in terms of value for your spending dollar.
Yeah, it's. I think it's, if the fight is there, you're gonna want to pay money, I think, to watch this Cormier Johnson fight, but. I mean, can you imagine if they flipped the main events on those two cards, the vibe for UFC 211 would be just absolutely through the roof. I mean, I would argue that that Miocic JDS main event is obviously not even 65% as strong as Cormier Johnson, but the depth there, I think, prevails it. So,
I'm much more interested in watching Cormier Johnson than mm-hmm. I am Miocic and JDS. But I mean, think about this: the last time Daniel Cormier defended the UFC light heavyweight title, October 3rd, 2015.
So, okay, hold on. I want to do this. This is my transition attempt, right? To get back to the card. October 2015, that's the last time he defended the title.
Okay.
Yes. You know, damn it. I was hoping that was like the like at that point in time, Shogun Hua had not won a fight in 27 years, but he had one win over Little Nog. So,
think about 2 months prior to that, he got that win against Little Nog. Yeah. It was, you know, first off, can John Volante learn some head movement?
Okay, it's established, Jason. He's not going to learn it, Jason. He was setting records for getting hit in the face, like, early on in his career. He's one of the great prodigies, like the next Joseon. And, gosh, I love watching John Volante. He ain't going to learn head movement, Jason. That's just not a part of the
game. Look, he's not going to be in a boring fight.
Yeah, and that's why he's an appointment viewing television. He's a great interview, an awesome guy. And he served as a blank canvas at times. He had some nice moments in this fight, don't get me wrong, in terms of offense. But, I mean, this was just the perfect opportunity for a veteran fighter who has looked old recently to get a win here. And hats off to Shogun.
You know, we talked about this a little bit on the preview podcast about the light heavyweight division and Shogun. And Shogun, you know, it wasn't that long ago that he was pretty much a forgotten guy in the division because of the losses that he's had, but now he's put together three straight wins. He entered this fight as a number six title challenger at light heavyweight. When you look at the guys above him, Ryan Bader, I would think at any moment we're going to find out whether the UFC has decided to match the contract offer he got from Bellator, or whether he's going to go to Bellator. Then you got number four, Jimmy Manoa, of course, fights on Saturday in the main event of UFC Fight Night 107 against Corey Anderson. I think a lot of people feel that is a showcase fight for Jimmy Manoa. Dana White has already talked about that, the fact of, you know, after his fight's over, they want to bring Jimmy Manoa to fight in Las Vegas. Then, of course, you have Gustafsson and Teixeira. They're going to fight at the end of May. And, of course, you got Rumble and Cormier. And, of course, we all know John Jones is coming back. Misha Cirkunov is a part of this picture. We talked about it on the previous podcast. I mentioned this on Twitter following Shogun's win. I think a Jimmy Manoa Shogun fight, as long as Manoa gets a win on Saturday, to me, I think that's a fight to make.
Yeah, I think it is too. And then then we're talking about a guy, the winner of that fight, very close to a title shot, like dangerously close to a title shot. Like the winner of that fight could be the next title challenger if John Jones never fights again, which I'm sure he will, but like he's had issues. But, so,
by the way, can John Jones be the third man in the booth at UFC 210?
Oh yeah. I mean,
could you imagine that?
Oh gosh, I mean, he would. It would be phenomenal. It would be straight out of the WWE, which, you know, put him next to Todd Grisham, and you're almost there. But that would be.
Could you imagine, like, Jones starts flipping Cormier off like in the middle of the fight? Just to screw with his head.
I mean, would you want to do that if you're John Jones? Would you want to screw with Cormier and then fight Anthony freaking Johnson?
Oh, I think if you're the UFC, I think that I think ideal world, they would love to have Rumble and Jones fight. I think that's a fight they truly want. Have you watched the promo commercials that's out for UFC 210?
No, I haven't.
A lot of people kind of pointed this out, that they believe it's a little slanted towards Rumble Johnson. When I watched it, I didn't take it put that way, but I do kind of get the sense that the fight that the UFC would love to make. I would tell you this. I think in terms of mapping out the future road at light heavyweight and saying you go Shogun against Jimmy Manoa, as long as Jimmy Manoa wins on Saturday, you're already saying Jones is going to get the winner of Cormier Johnson, obviously, as long as there's no more issues there with John Jones. And then I'm thinking Misha Cirkunov versus the Gustafsson Teixeira winner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, that seems to be kind of the path where this division's going.
Yeah, yeah. For all intents and purposes, if we are still living in the NCAA tournament vibe, Shogun Hua, with this victory, I think has found himself in a Final Four of sorts in terms of, with this win, I think he's two victories away from receiving a title.
And how crazy is that to think? You know, you think about it, you go back to the middle of 2015, and if I would have said, hey, we're going to, in 2017, we're going to talk about Shogun Hua potentially being a fight or two away from a title shot.
Jason?
You would have probably said, what, at 185?
Yeah, no, I would have said, I don't know what I would have said, because, like, Shogun, again, and the most important thing I think we need to reiterate here is Shogun Hua has won these three fights, correct. He has not looked amazing.
Okay. No, he's not.
This is entirely dependent on the context of the division. And as soon as he fights Johnson, Jones, Manoa, Anderson. I mean, I may pick him in his next fight, but as soon as he fights Jones, Johnson, Cormier, oh my goodness gracious, that's going to be brutal.
Well, we both know there is a huge drop off when you there's a levels of the UFC 205 pound division. There's John Jones, slightly under him is Cormier, Rumble, slightly under them would be Gustavsson, Teixeira, and then there's a big drop off after that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just absolutely, when we say big drop off, I the betting odds for some of these fights would just be interesting to speculate on it and see how they would play out. But, you know, before we begin to tear down Shogun whenever he gets matched up against top-level competition, which he almost assuredly will, I guess it's nice to enjoy the moment for now. He's won three in a row. He won in a co-main event in Brazil. I mean, I was worried for this Brazilian crowd. They had a couple of their fighters not necessarily go their way, but that was a nice back-to-back victories with Shogun. And then, oh my goodness gracious, Edson Barboza's flying knee. Are you kidding me, Jason? Does this guy have enough of like being a part of highlight reels?
Yeah. I mean, by the way, if you were let's go quickly on Shogun here, if you were not going to go the Jimmy Manoa route, how about Volkan Oezdemir?
For Shogun? Yeah, I think
if you're maybe looking to maybe kind of put him in Brazil to kind of, you know, be that guy, but you don't want to give him a top level guy, Volkan Oezdemir maybe the right opponent.
Yeah, no, I think that's certainly your alternative. You have Oezdemir, and then also I guess you have Ilir Latifi out there as well, lower down. But I think Volkan certainly represents a better version of Latifi in terms of what you're getting out of it. But it's a lot of B-side type fighters below Shogun in the rankings where you actually would probably favor him anyway.
And on Barboza, I mean, man, what a beautifully timed knee he had there. And you look at what may be next for Barboza, and everything is about timing in this sport. And with everything that's going on with Conor McGregor, and we'll see what happens with him, I think timing-wise, does it not make sense? Tony Ferguson, Edson Barboza?
Ooh, poor Tony. Poor Tony.
If you're Tony Ferguson, you basically sit on the sidelines just wait for the Conor fight. I mean, or the Khabib fight.
Yeah, it's hard. If you're in Tony Ferguson, it's hard not to. I mean, because you got out there, you beat in Barboza, and you kind of have established yourself as one of the, if not the best lightweights in the division. Obviously, the honor, I would say, you would put that at the feet of Conor. But Ferguson, you look at what he's done, he certainly built a case around it. And I would say, Jason, he's probably itching to fight. Last time we saw him in action was November against RDA. I know he's itching to fight. The fight against Barboza would represent not a great opportunity for Ferguson other than to remain in the eyes of the consciousness in MMA. Slowly but surely build up his stock, be a part of what would almost assuredly be a great fight. But obviously in that matchup, I mean, we're making this matchup in the perspective of what's best for Edson Barboza, and that's what's best for Edson Barboza.
I mean, if it's not Tony Ferguson, I got to think that it's the winner of Alvarez and Poirier, right?
Yeah, because I do think anytime you make an Edson Barboza fight as well, the other ingredient you're looking for is action, because he is just a near guarantee that you're going to leave the arena you know, thinking about whatever he did in the cage, and it just happened again against Benil Dariush. Keep in mind, by the way, in this fight, Dariush was getting the better at times on the feet against Edson. He was really pushing the pace and outpointing Barboza. It was just a matter of Barboza countering with that beautiful knee knockout. But back to Barboza, I like that matchup as well, because you look at the matchup against Ferguson or the matchup against Poirier Eddie Alvarez, not only are you getting a compelling fight at the very top of the food chain in this lightweight class, you're also getting a fight that's likely to be a fight of the night.
And I'll tell you, one of the things about Benil Dariush, in going back to that first round of that fight, is, I mean, he was taking some shots to get some shots too. I mean, there was some times I was like, man, he is just taking some, and you could hear his corner was just yelling at him to keep his hands up, because there was a lot of times he was leaving that chin out there for Edson Barboza to tee off on him.
Yeah, it was a matter of kind of taking the receipt to get what you want, because for Barboza, it's going to be incredibly difficult to have your way with him on the feet and not field it the day after. I mean, you're going to have to take some shots, to deliver some shots, and to, most importantly, again, to kind of control the pace. It's so important, and you didn't really get the sense that Barboza was really destroying him with kicks, I thought, in the very beginning, which is what we see at times, and I think that's kind of what you saw out of Dariush's movements. But again, not to be lost in this fight was that Beno Dariush did really look well on the feet, which is an accomplishment in and of itself, when I think in the early portion of his career, he was thought of as a grappler fighter, but he's obviously changed that mold way, way, way before this. But this was a nice little stamp. But I wonder if he's still in Brazil right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things about Dariush is I thought he did an excellent job of making sure he wasn't staying too much at range to allow Edson to get those kicks off. But, you know, he's now 2-2 in his last four fights, so we'll see what happens with him. But, you know, Edson Barboza, he's in a great situation. I mean, you know, it's kind of very quietly, I think people kind of forgot the fact of, you know, he's got, you know, these wins against Pettis and Gilbert Melendez. So we'll see what happens there with him. Ray Borg, a huge win for him over Jussiel Formiga. And, you know, Ray Borg, one of those guys coming up that 125-pound division. You know, he's been in the UFC since 2014, since losing his debut. He has won 5 of 6. The only loss, decision loss with Justin Scoggins. Probably the only thing that's going against him. And this is, some, I guess, two things that are kind of going against him in terms of getting to that title shot is, A, he has missed weight 2 times. And the other part is his last 4 fights have gone the distance. You know, UFC, you know, and the flyweight division is a division that, you know, notoriously does not have a lot of finishes in it. You know, I think that would be the only thing that's going to hurt him. But unfortunately, at some point, he's going to have to fight a Cejudo or a Benavidez. And I don't know if I would pick him in either one of those fights.
I probably wouldn't either, but he might just win it because I tell you what, I did not pick him against Formiga, and he won it. He was awesome in these grappling exchanges. It was back and forth. Jussiel certainly had his moments, but at 23 years old in this flyweight division, there is some level of optimism, I think, if you're the UFC, of just simply having a guy that DJ has not beaten yet. And I'm just going to double check that hasn't happened because no, you never know. You never know at 125, but you look down the list, man, of flyweight, and it's just it's a cast the size of The Bachelorette, and they all have something in common. They've gone on dates with Demetrius Johnson, and it has not ended well. So you want to see Ray Borg rise up the ranks, I think, if you're the UFC, because you value unique challengers. You're right in that he certainly has not had a definitive performance. There really isn't something you can point to and say, this is why you should get excited to watch Ray Borg take on the champion. He's not there yet, but at 23 years old, he's obviously in an incredible camp. He's certainly in Jackson Winklejohn. He's certainly growing fight in and fight out. So there's a lot of things to get excited about. It's just that his way up the flyweight rankings isn't a dramatic leap. It's just slowly but surely footstep over footstep.
And I got to think what has to be next for him would be the winner of the Formiga Pettis fight or the Cejudo Pettis fight.
Man, yeah. Maybe. You're probably right.
I mean, you look at him right now, he's at number 8. So he just, you know, when you look at what's above him, he has fought Dustin Ortiz, but he lost him before. Ian McCall, we don't know what's going to happen with Ian McCall. Then you got, you know, Sergio Pettis, Wilson Heiss, Jussiel Formiga, who he just beat, number 3 in the world. Then it's Cejudo, then it's Benavidez.
Yeah, that I guess that shows you a stark contrast of this division. I mean, maybe Brandon Moreno goes out there and beats Dustin Ortiz in about a month from now, right?
Yeah, I mean, would you just give him Benavidez right now?
Ooh.
Benavidez doesn't have a fight booked.
Yeah, and I think that fight is made from the perspective of Benavidez, because Benavidez needs to fight people. He needs to fight intriguing challengers, and I will say it's worth the risk, because, I mean, this is a fighter in Borg who's shown loss and the ability to rebound from said loss, and he's 23 years old, so in terms of his peak, in terms of marketing, he's probably 3 or 4 years away from that, but in terms of where he is in the division, he certainly has earned an opportunity to fight those talented type fighters, so I think it may actually be worth a shot against Benavidez. And I tell you what, with that in mind, I guess the winner of Pettis Cejudo as well. But the Benavidez fight would obviously be just an incredible tough mountain to climb. Benavidez
needs someone to upset DJ.
Mm-hmm.
Dana White's already been on record basically saying he's not interested in a trilogy matchup between Benavidez and Demetrius. I mean, the flyweight, it's one of those divisions that fans just aren't excited about. And I ultimately feel as if the UFC could find someone to come in there and just start finishing dudes every fight, that they might be able to get some interest in the division. But right now, there's just no interest in the division.
It's going to be interesting to see how many fights Benavidez is going to have to win.
By the way, you mentioned about how you were watching the Rockets game. Did you just see this dude came on the court while the game was going on?
I was looking at, oh man, I have to get my remote and go back.
Literally, I think the Cavs were bringing the ball up the court, and this dude just runs on the court.
So what are the chances that this is Taruto? And here's another thing, Jason. We both have worked broadcast and whatnot. You know what I absolutely hate? Whenever a guy runs on the court, that the rule is don't show it and just like show the stance. I love chaos.
Oh, if I was a producer of that, I'm showing it.
I love chaos. It's entertaining, man. I mean, come on. Because here's the thing, Jason. That may not be on TV, the person on the arena. But if you're a TV, you're losing out because that's on somebody's iPhone, and they're going to stop watching your TV and they're going to start looking at the internet.
Oh, come on! You know that's going to be like a Facebook Live.
yeah. There's no way in 2017 somebody is running on the court without an Instagram picture. And now I'm looking at it, and this man, I don't understand what his goal was.
I almost feel like I want to do an interview with someone who does that after the fact.
Oh, yeah.
And go, okay, tell me what you were thinking. Were you just like, because most likely you're going to jail. Like, is it really worth it?
You need to be an undercover police officer to interview.
Could you imagine if, like, you were someone who did that, and then, like, 6 months down the road, you go to apply for a job interview, and, like, someone who was sitting front row was there when you did that?
Someone that just Googles your name. No, you did that. I mean, you got to wonder what the career what the career is for people that run onto the court. I feel like you don't see many people.
I always love when people do it during a football game, because first off, you've got a wide area you can run around, because it's one of those things where you just like, if you're your security, you're just like, man, let him run around for about 2 minutes. He's going to wear himself out.
Yeah, and it's just kind of a dumb sport to do it on, because if you piss off the players, they will destroy you. I mean, the worst sport to ever run into would obviously be mixed martial arts, right? Because you would jump inside a very small cage with two highly trained combat artists. That would be the worst one. Football, you got the biggest terrain, but just,
It's kind of surprising it hasn't happened in MMA.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where
come on, there's a lot of alcohol that's get that people are taken.
There's a lot of dudes with championship belts they want to defend. And oh man,
I was thinking about this. If someone put a over under number on interim UFC title fights in 2017, what's the over under number? Six.
Jason, what if I told you there's already been six fights? I don't know. I mean, I would put it at eight because it's become stupid. I feel like we've seen more interim title fights than actual title fights this year. Is that true? Is that a true thing?
Let's see here. 208, you had the inaugural women's featherweight title.
Okay.
209, we had the welterweight title. We were supposed to have an interim lightweight title. That did not happen. January, did we have any title fights? I don't think so.
Okay, so my point,
let's be honest about it. We've got a good likelihood of Tony Ferguson, Edson Barboza for the interim lightweight title.
Oh, great. And you know what? Joseph Benavidez needs to just start defending the interim flyweight title.
He should. He should go for that. By the way, talking about, mentioning about dumb statements or people doing idiotic things. So, as I thought Marion Renault Becegaya was a draw. I had 28-28. You cannot tell me. First off, I think someone should probably explain to Betch Gahea what a 10-8 round is, because clearly she doesn't understand what a 10-8 round is. And this was what this is from Kiamre Cruz on Saturday night. This is a quote from Betch Gahea. Quote, "It was clear that I won the first and second rounds, and I only lost the third round. I do not understand this result." Clearly she doesn't understand what a 10-8 round means.
Yeah. Betch Gahea says dumb things a lot. I mean, if you told me that one of these two fighters, Marion Renault or Betch Gahea, was very upset about the fact that they did not win this fight, I would have thought it would have been Renault, because the clearest round in this fight was the third round when it was a 10-8, and the first two could have gone either way, to be completely honest.
Yeah, I mean, if you had this 29-27 for Marion Renault, no issue. But how about this one? Betch Gahea, you talk about a fighter who's accomplished a lot with a really crappy resume in the UFC. When you talk about resumes in the UFC, her UFC wins: Julie Kesey, Jessamyn Duke, Shayna Baszler, Jessica Eye. You want to know what their combined UFC record is?
How many wins does Jessica Eye have?
One.
So one win and five losses.
Two wins. You forget Jessamyn Duke has a UFC win.
Oh, damn. Didn't realize that.
2-12 with one no contest.
So we're talking explode fight series.
I mean, you think about what Betch Gahea has been able to accomplish in the UFC. And I think you can make the case that her best performance in the UFC was actually in a loss against Raquel Pennington. But to sit there, when you see that statement, I mean, look, you can't sit there and go, if Betch Gahea thinks the third round's 10-9, someone needs to examine her head. Because that's a clear 10-8 round. Even under the old scoring system, that's a clear 10-8 round. And we talk about in judging in MMA in 2017 is, you know, there's a difference between when someone ekes out a very close 10-9 round than when someone dominates a round. There's got to be a scoring difference.
Yeah, and there's simply no way to score those first two 10-9s and then go and score a 10-9 for round three when Renault dominated the fight from a ground and strike standpoint, as well as submission attempt standpoint. You know, Betch Gahea says dumb stuff. She said something along the lines, what'd she say about Ronda Rousey's suicide or about her father? Like, she said awful things.
She said awful things.
I've been looking for the exact quotes. I haven't really found them, but I just
constantly. And then I believe she said that she was misquoted, I believe, or misinterpreted, I think was her line to try to tail off on that. But you know, look, it was Marion Renault, she knows she doesn't have long in the sport. First off, let's not run this fight back, because I don't think anyone wants to see these two ladies fight again, because it wasn't a very exciting fight for the first 10 minutes. At least for my viewing pleasure, it wasn't. I mean, third round was, you know, clear dominating round for Marion Renault. I think 28-28 was the right scorecard.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, even Marion Renault, I think she said, "I don't accept the draw," which, I mean, look, it was a draw. I'm more optimistic about her than Correa moving forward, both in terms of fight quality and fight skill. So I'm looking forward to what's next. Certainly not a rematch for either of these two. But yeah, this fight was relatively lackluster in the first two rounds. It did obviously to turn up in the third frame. I would imagine a slight step up in competition for Renault. Well, not really, actually. Kind of around that Correa 7 through 11 range for Renault.
Yeah. Also on this main card, Alex Oliveira gets a big win against Tim Means, submission. In the second round, Oliveira looked very good in that fight. Obviously you see the no longer, you know, trying to cut down the 155, 170 where he needs to be. Big win from there. Do want to mention on Joe Soto and Hani Yahya. There's an accidental headbutt where Joe Soto is the one who takes all the damage, starts leaking, which I don't know if you thought the way I did. I thought the doctor was going to stop the fight.
It was a mess. I did too. And I mean, the blood did affect the fight.
I mean, how about the referee in that fight doesn't exactly do her best to stop that fight immediately to get the doctor to look in. Joe ends up getting a dominant position, and then on the restart, he loses the position.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, he probably would have lost it anyway, given the blood. But still, it's always kind of infuriating when that happens and it's not reset.
But, I mean, a big win for Joe Soto, gets a decision win. I thought he won this fight. You know, Joe, in terms of, I mean, got off to a rough start in the UFC, 0-3. Most guys, UFC maybe wouldn't give him that fourth fight. He gets that fourth fight. Now he's 1-3 in a row. Big win for him. We touched on Prezeris and Berkman. Jeremy Kennedy, a big win over Hani Jason. Hey, he's looking for to either fight Andre Feely or Darren Elkins, which what's notable about that is the fact that he's trained at Team Alpha Male in the past, going out there to before. Also, Paulo Henrique Costa, dominating win, big win for him. Garrett McClellan, probably the last time we've seen him in the UFC. He'll have to try to work his way back there. By the way, there was no fight of the night bonus. There was four performance of the night bonuses. They went to Kelvin Gastelum, Edson Barboza, Michelle Prezeris, and Paulo Henrique Costa. Really no surprises there when it came to the performance of the night bonuses. But I think when we think about this fight card overall, I think the two things you're going to think about is Kelvin Gastelum and Edson Barboza.
Yeah, and with the cherry on top being Kevin Lee. But I think those two are the fighters who are most immediately in serious consideration among the very tops of the division, and their performances were exciting. I think Shogun Hua fulfills the first step of that. I mean, his performance wasn't as exciting, but he's certainly a member of the 205 picture. For both Kelvin and for Barboza, they got the highlight reel win. They got the victory. And moving forward, I'm more looking forward to Edson Barboza. But moving forward, I think Kelvin Gastelum is more likely to be a part of a main event type fight.
And to go back, everything else that happened in MMA this past weekend on Friday night, it was LFA 6 there in San Antonio, Texas, headlined by Ray Rodriguez, getting a split decision win in the main event. But the two matchups that you want to headline here, Eric Anderson gets a win over John Kirk. This was initially supposed to be Eric Anderson versus Larry Crowe. Crowe pulls out. Kirk steps up on short notice, and pretty much the feeling was that ultimately this became a showcase fight for Eric Anderson, which ultimately ended up being there. It was a catchweight bout of 190 pounds due to the short notice matchup, and big win there from Eric Anderson. But really, I think what people are going to talk about, Mackenzie Dern gets the win, but obviously the weight is once again, a question mark with her in terms of, and I thought Pat Miletich did a really good job on the broadcast, early on the broadcast, where he's basically saying is, really it's very tough if you want to bounce between MMA competition and jiu-jitsu competition in terms of your body recovering, weight, cutting weight, whatnot, and maybe, essentially pointing out that maybe she's got to kind of make that decision. Are you a full-time MMA fighter? Or do you want to do both there? And, it basically sounds like it was initially a catch weight of 115. And then, she's not going to be able to make 115. They end up, she makes 120. I don't know if you saw the pre-fight interview they did with Catherine Roy, where basically she's like, yeah, I'm here to bang. Essentially, that's what she said. And that she was, it almost sounded like she didn't know jiu-jitsu training for this, which I was like, oh, that's probably not a good idea. But, a clear win for Mackenzie Dern. And, I think there seems to be this rush with her. I mean, she is only 23 years old. And, and I guess everyone keeps doing this narrative of her. She's the next Ronda Rousey. But how about just let her be Mackenzie Dern?
Yeah, because that's going to be incredibly marketable. I mean, she is someone who is incredibly skilled in the jiu-jitsu realm. She understands how to build a following. If you just look at her social media stuff, I mean, she's got a lot of following. She looks to be incredibly skilled. I thought the performance against Catherine Roy was good. Catherine Roy is a pretty sprat fighter, but she also wasn't very good in this fight. So it wasn't like an A++, but it was an A. And the progression is there. An impressive performance. I mean, there was some poise on the feet. There was also a gif of like a really awful spinning back fist attack that Catherine Roy attended. That's out there on the interwebs to check out and enjoy. But yeah, Dern, probably not the next Ronda Rousey. Probably won't have nearly as much of success, but I do think she will have success. I do think she will be a part of the UFC one day. Just give her time. Let her develop. She's 23. She's got a lot of potential. She showcased some of it. But certainly at LFA, I mean, the more impressive fighter was Eric Anders, who got the finish.
Yeah, it was. I interviewed Eric a couple weeks prior to this matchup. I thought it was really interesting that essentially Bellator did not make a run after him after he won his Bellator debut in 23 seconds. And basically at this point, all his intentions are working to get to the UFC. Then on Saturday, it was ACB 54 over there in Manchester, England. You talked about it earlier on the show. Khalidov, 21 seconds to defeat Luke Barnett. And a guy that I think a lot of people would love to see him in the UFC. I just don't think it's going to ever happen. I think he just gets paid so well by KSW that I just think it's probably less than a 50% chance that you ever see him in the UFC.
Yeah, and that's a shame. I mean, Khalidov has been on the radar for years upon years upon years at middleweight. That is a guy that you would want to see. And then just, what else happened on that ACB card, Jason? I believe there were, 77 former UFC fighters on that card?
I mean, it was a great lineup that they put together there. Had some fights that you kind of thought that were, probably a little bit of showcase matchups. You think of Saul Rogers, I think it's one of them that you thought that it would be a little bit of a showcase for him. He ends up getting submitted. Bubba Jenkins, he gets submitted as well. I think those two fights you kind of expected that would probably set up more for them to get the victories there. The guy who took on Bubba, took the fight essentially on 24 hours. Excuse me, the guy who fought Saul Rogers, he basically took it on 24 hours notice. But had a lot of Tanner Boser, who was a guy newly signed by the UFC earlier this year. He lost via split decision on this card. Bubba, a very weird triangle choke that his opponent pulled off, and he went to sleep there. It was a fight card that I was on the treadmill watching a good amount of it from the gym, so it was nice. I hear they're paying these fighters really well. I just don't know how they're making the amount of money when you can watch a card for free.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question, Jason. My best suggestion is these are just really, really like controversial people in Russia, and they have a lot of money. That's my suggestion.
Yeah. Also, it should be noticed over the weekend, Emmanuel Newton, the former Bellator light heavyweight champion, he suffered another defeat. That happened, and of course, coming up this week, we have UFC Fight Night 107 from London. Jay Manilow, Corey Anderson. We will not have a preview podcast for that show, as I'm taking some time off to go have some fun. Go watch. Go ahead to the first and second round of the NCAA tournament there in Orlando. But we'll kind of briefly touch on this card here. When you look at the main card, which by the way will start at 5 p.m. Eastern time, 2 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday on UFC Fight Pass. I love the main event on this fight card, Gunnar Nelson and Alan Jermaine. Also like the matchup that's going to kick off the main card. That's Arnold Allen and Marquan Amirakani. In terms of the rest of the fight card, Joe Duffy, Rezmi Dadi is another fight that has me interested on this card. Also interested to see Mark Diakis to see how well he does here in his second UFC fight. Is there any fights in this card that really have you jazzed up?
No, I'm kidding. I love the Nelson Jaboyan fight. You got a very good looking fighter in Alan Jaboyan and a very good looking fighter in Gunnar Nelson. And I think the chemistry between the two is great. I think most importantly though, you got to circle the main event. Before I talk about that real quick, just scanning the card, I think Mark Diakis is the guy at 155 to get most excited about, like you said. And then Brett Johns at bantamweight against Ian Entwistle. And Tom Breeze at middleweight against Ola Whalebaum Ghosh. Those would be the fighters I would circle. And, without naming every fight on this card, also Vincente Luque at Leon Edwards.
Yeah, that's a great fight.
That would be the one to star. But the main event, Jason, if we don't do a preview show, I know you got some stuff to do. Who's your pick, Corey Anderson or Jimmy Manilow?
I go Jimmy Manilow, but I would be concerned that Corey Anderson uses wrestling and works his way to a 5-round decision.
Yeah, that's why I'll go, oh God, that fight's going 5 rounds. Oh man, I could imagine this one in the 4th or 5th. It could be ugly, but just because literally is there any light heavyweight that you look at that's not John Jones or Daniel Cormier that you feel good about them going to the 5th round? I don't know if there is. There may be some young guy out there, but I don't know. I think Corey Anderson's certainly going to be the guy you would expect to win those later rounds, just because I think wrestling is easier to sustain if both guys, have maybe lost energy. But Manilow could just knock him out.
And the thing that's tough about Jimmy Manilow is and I guess why it's tough to kind of get behind him is he's, every time we've seen that step up in competition, he just hasn't been able to get that win. Now, look, they're against the top guys in this division. And, I mean, I think if you're UFC, you have to want Jimmy Manuel to win this fight.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I don't think you have, like, an extreme opinion either way, to be frank with you. But Manuel was probably the guy you want. And then, again, a Manuel Shogun fight, that's something you could certainly market. And that's something that would probably be incredibly exciting.
And, of course, I mentioned it's the retirement fighter, Brad Pickett. He's gone through an opponent change. It was initially supposed to take on Henry Baronis. Now is going to take on Marlon Vera. So, Brad Pickett, a guy who's been doing this for a long time. And I saw American Top Team did a little celebration for him at the gym prior to going off. Also, in terms of other MMA that's going on this weekend, I'll mention Knockout Promotions 54, which is on Friday night. Cody Stamann, watch out for him. He gets a win. I think his next fight will likely be in the UFC. Also, Hard Knocks 54 is on Saturday night, our promotion there in Canada. So if you're looking to check out some regional MMA, ton of regional MMA to check out this weekend. Also, you have Valor Fights 41. That's on Saturday night. You can watch that on flowcombat.com. But, yes, we will not have a preview show later on this week. I will have a regular MMA Report podcast. That'll come out on Wednesday. Plus, I'll have a new episode of the MMA Insiders podcast coming out this week. Look for that on Tuesday. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the MMA Report post-fight show. Of course, you can always listen to the show at radioinfluence.com. Also, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search the MMA Report.
This is the Crush Report with Jeff Crushell.
A simple question. Are your kids using appearance and performance-enhancing drugs? Millions of high school students admit to using. Most are not even athletes. 62.5% used to improve body image and looks. It's dangerous and it's deadly. Yet 85% of high school kids say they've never talked about it with a parent, teacher, or coach. Here's Don Hooten, president of the Taylor Hooten Foundation.
You know, it's such a competition today to have just this quote-unquote perfect body image. And like many coaches do, Taylor was told he needed to get bigger, he needed to get stronger, and he needed to get faster in order for him to improve his chances of making the varsity team. What the coach was unaware of at the time, that about 50% of the boys on Taylor's baseball team were already using anabolic steroids. Taylor began using steroids when he was 16 years old. And shortly after his 17th birthday, we had just returned from a family vacation, and one of the side effects of using anabolic steroids and altering the hormones in the body is depression. And my younger brother took his life as a result of these drugs. And as a family, we came together and said, we have to do something. We have to speak out. We have to share his story. People need to understand how dangerous these are. And we formed the Taylor Hooten Foundation, his name, to create awareness.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Crushell, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.